It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Andrew Brandt. Andrew is Director of Trade Policy, U.S. Grains Council, Washington, D.C. Great to see you.
Thanks. Thanks. Good. Great to be here at Commodity Classic, and good to see you, Tony.
Okay, U.S. Grains Council. For those who don't know, what's the purpose of the council, and who are you serving?
So the U.S. Grains Council is known as officially a cooperator with USDA. We work a lot with the Foreign Ag Service to develop markets overseas. And so one of the motto of the Grains Council is we work where the markets don't. So whether that's a trade barrier or just doing market development, like in parts of Africa where we're trying to develop, new import demand for our corn via helping stand up their poultry industry, teaching them how to use our products, DDGs, corn, et cetera. We also do sorghum and barley. That is what our focus is. So we are very much focused outside the United States, and our whole reason for our existence is to increase the exports of U.S. corn, barley, sorghum, DDGs, and ethanol.
I'm glad you threw in ethanol because I know you spent some time on Capitol Hill, both sides, House and Senate side, and spent a little bit of time with a senator who's pretty passionate about ethanol.
Yes, I did formerly work for Senator Grassley from Iowa. He was one of the leading proponents. There's several senators that weigh in heavily. Klobuchar from Minnesota, Thune from South Dakota. The Illinois senators are big proponents. I mean, there's a lot of the Midwestern states. But it has been a great program. It has certainly increased farmers' income across the Midwest, really anywhere corn is grown in the United States. It's been good for the bottom line of farmers. So it's a program we think is nothing but benefits on both the environmental side, helping cars be more fuel efficient and burn fuel cleaner, and then also on the job side, it's been a big winner. And so we focus on explaining this to countries overseas that are considering adopting ethanol for like the same reasons we did as a replacement for MTBE. Our ethanol team focuses a lot on that, where some of these large economies around the world may be thinking about it, but they may not have their own local feedstock. And then we have to convince them to, remove the barriers and allow American ethanol in.
So I'm going to start with a neighbor to the south, and let's stick with ethanol for just a moment. There was a time that we were seeing some changes in the national energy policy in Mexico, and the opportunity was looking brighter for ethanol to move into Mexico. Where would we be today on that?
Well, I think we're still hopeful and optimistic. Eventually, we'll get there. There were moments where we had high hopes. The current administration down there has taken Pemex and kind of made it more of a completely state-controlled entity again, rolling back some of the more, I guess you would call them, market-oriented reforms that previous administrations had tried to do. So as part of that, some of their goals for ethanol usage have been sidelined, seem not to be close to being recognized. It doesn't mean we won't eventually get there, but for now, we still have some job security in trying to promote ethanol and get its usage higher in our friendly country to the south in Mexico.
So I'm just wondering, is this not a perfect example of how you go into markets and you try to help tell that story and help build the demand before it really even exists? And in some cases, it may take 10 or 20 years.
Yeah, no, this is a great example of that. I mean, a lot of countries have their own interest, and, in rare cases, it's, you go in and make your pitch and they're like, makes sense. Welcome in. More often than not, though, you kind of have to work at it for years and years. It was, nearly two decades for us in China, I believe, from the time we opened our office over there to when we got, year in, year out, significant exports of corn there. So that's just one example. But, we see that around the world. It is not a show up, make your pitch once. We have to usually set up an office, create relationships, and work at it for years to really get these export markets open. And then they also tend to be kind of delicate. Like, even though it takes us years to develop and open them, they can be turned off with one government action. So it's an interesting business, but it's worthwhile, and we do it to help the farmers. So, we take a lot of pride in that, and we know we're doing a noble deed here, helping make our corn products move around the world to where they are needed.
Perfect example. Again, we can go to Mexico, where they've been a great buyer of U.S. corn. Recall somewhere around 2000, 2001, the administration at that time, just prior to Fox being elected, had said they didn't want GMO corn at the time. Things changed, but seems like things come full circle. Where are we today?
So today, back in 2020, specifically the last day of 2020, Mexico issued what's known as a biotech decree. And essentially it was vaguely written, but the bottom line was it said no more GMO corn could be imported into Mexico, not immediately, but as soon as they became self-sufficient. More recently, just last month, middle of last month, they updated that decree and kind of clarified it in ways, but still many questions remain. But now they are down to human consumption, no GMO corn for human consumption. Some people would say that is specific only to tortillas. I'm not sure if every lawyer would agree it's that precisely written, but that is what some in Mexico would claim. And so that is very problematic for us. You know, two main things. Mexico is our traditional number one market. They were displaced by China 2 years ago, but looks like this year they'll be back at our number one export market for corn. And then secondly, they're trying to portray GMOs or biotechnology as unsafe for human consumption. And that, of course, is not anything we can accept. There is no negotiation to be had there. We have sound science. We have the U.S. agencies that have reviewed this. We've been planting and consuming GMOs for, 20, 30 years here in the States. They are fine, they are safe, and they are a big piece of, successfully managing sustainability going forward, providing the food the world needs, ensuring stable supplies, whether that's, the war in Ukraine that has disrupted things or droughts we're seeing. GMOs or biotechnology produces higher, more consistent yielding crops that are going to help feed the world. And, I speak of it mainly from the corn perspective. Obviously, we're here at Commodity Class. You got soybeans, many other crops that you have these same examples of where biotechnology has helped create a, higher yielding, more consistent yielding crop that is available to the world to help, since the pandemic and with the war in Ukraine, a lot of the embassies we talked to now, one of their chief concerns is just food security. When the war broke out in Ukraine, a lot of the embassies that, we have relationships with, but maybe were presented us with challenges as far as market access, all of a sudden they didn't care about any of that. Their first question would be, do you all have corn to sell us if we need it? And so food security has become a bigger piece of that. We were coming out of last year, we had a drought across much of the United States, but we still had a pretty solid yield and a pretty solid crop that we are ready to export to the world to make sure people have the food they need, whether they're feeding it to livestock, processing it, turning it into other products. We have that. And that, we also have this inflationary environment now coupled with, the problems of the pandemic, the war. And now you have inflation, which, really has nothing to do with ag, but is more central bankers, I would say. And so having a stable supply of corn instead of, having a short crop has helped keep prices, I think, they were high last year, but they could have been worse had we had an even shorter crop. And so I think biotechnology is proven. It's safe. Mexico is not, they are not required to buy our biotech corn, but, they're also not allowed under USMCA to take government actions to specifically prohibit it. If a consumer wants to buy non-biotech, that's their right. But as far as government actions, it's hard to see how this is allowable under the USMCA, which is the trade agreement between the United States and Mexico.
And when we talk about trade agreements, we had this phase one agreement with China that somewhat ended a trade war, if you will, that really started a few years ago at Commodity Classic with another one of the grains that you represent, and that was sorghum. And I guess the question here is, how important is it to be out developing new trade deals with countries we don't have them with already?
I think it's very important. I mean, the U.S. relationship with China is tenuous. You see the comments from members of Congress on both sides of the aisle, our trade ambassador. No one is currently portraying that relationship as, rosy, happy-go-lucky, ideal. It's tenuous. It's kind of a, I guess you would call it a forced relationship at the moment. With both sides are probably unhappy. I don't know if the Chinese domestically complain about us like we've complained about them, but I certainly from our side, we're unhappy. I think we are moving, we're always trying to diversify. The Grains Council just opened an office in India with the hopes of developing that market. And I do think that one will be another market that will take time to open. But if you look at the two most populous countries in the world, India and China, the relationship with China is going to become tenuous. They're our traditional number two corn market. From phase one, that was the year they popped up to number one overall with 21 million metric tons of corn imports from the U.S. That was, that's the all-time record of corn imports. So it's a, I think we are, as the Grains Council, we stay out of a lot of the other stuff going on in the world that complicates that. But from our perspective, we want to keep, ideally, the market open. We saw the trade war here certainly complicated that. But it is something, we're always thinking about how do we diversify, find new markets. It is tough, though. I mean, India is not exactly, it's going to take time in India. So, there's a lot of work to be done.
So good to see you. We wish you the best, and let's catch up again soon.
Love to. Thanks for having me on the show, and shout out to all the farmers in West Texas. Hope you're going to have a good year planting cotton, and your wheat crop comes in well.
Andrew Brandt is Director of Trade Policy, U.S. Grains Council, from the 2023 Commodity Classic in Orlando. I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.